All right, get ready, because today we're taking a deep dive into this wild case from Florida that really shakes things up in the world of estate planning. Have you ever heard of those payable on death designations?
You mean PODs?
Yeah, exactly, those PODs. They basically let you bypass the whole probate process and pass your money directly to someone after you're gone. Pretty handy, right?
They can be, for sure, especially for smaller estates or folks who want to keep things simple. But this case, it just shows, even with something as seemingly straightforward as a POD, things can get really complicated.
Oh yeah, complicated is putting it lightly. So what went down? Lay it on us.
All right, so we've got Mrs. Aiko Okamua Lamp, 87 years old, and she had a plan for her assets. Back in 2009, she and her husband, he's passed away since then, they set up a family trust and a will.
Okay. Sounds pretty standard so far.
Right, their intention with the trust and will. Super clear, everything was supposed to go to the Hodges Boulevard Presbyterian Church when they passed away.
So where does the drama come in? Seems pretty straightforward, right?
Well, hold on tight. Mrs. Lamp had over $333,000 in accounts at the Navy Federal Credit Union. These were accounts she jointly held with her husband before he died. And then, get this, just days before Mrs. Lamp passes away, a POD designation pops up, and it shifts those funds away from the church.
Seriously? So the church was supposed to get everything, but then someone else got named as a beneficiary at the last minute. That's crazy. Who ended up getting the money?
The POD named her neighbor. And get this, the neighbor was also her caregiver. It even included the caregiver's family in the designation.
Oh, wow. So not only did the church get cut out, but the money went to someone who was already really close with Mrs. Lamp. I'm guessing this is where undue influence enters the picture, right?
You're spot on. The church wasted no time contesting that POD. They argued that the caregiver used their position to pressure Mrs. Lamp into making that last minute change.
Okay, before we dive deeper, can you break down this undue influence thing for us?
Yeah.
It sounds kind of ominous.
Well, it's basically when someone uses their power or a position of trust to manipulate another person into making decisions they wouldn't normally make if they were acting freely. It's taking advantage of someone's vulnerability, especially when there's a power imbalance.
So it's not just about disagreeing with someone's choices. It's about whether those choices were genuinely theirs, made without any pressure or manipulation.
Exactly. And in this case, there were a bunch of red flags that screamed potential undue influence.
Okay, I'm all ears. What kind of red flags are we talking about here?
Well, first off, this caregiver wasn't just a neighbor. She was a lot of things to Mrs. Lamb. A friend, a paid caregiver, her attorney, in fact, and even her healthcare surrogate. That's a whole lot of influence concentrated in one person.
Yeah, that's a pretty tangled web. So you're saying these close ties, especially the legal and healthcare aspects, could have given the caregiver the opportunity to manipulate Mrs. Lamp?
It definitely raises some eyebrows. And to make things even more suspicious, there were conflicting stories about what Mrs. Lamp really wanted to happen with the money. People from the church said she always intended for them to inherit everything. But of course, the caregiver and her family claimed she had a change of heart and didn't want the church to get the money.
Classic. He said, she said, but with a ton of money on the line.
Mm-hmm. You also mentioned that the timing of this POD seemed fishy, right?
Absolutely. The fact that it was created just days before Mrs. Lamp died while her health was going downhill fast, that's a massive red flag. That kind of last-minute switch definitely warrants a closer look.
So we've got a close relationship with multiple roles, conflicting stories about Mrs. Lamp's wishes, and a super conveniently timed POD. Seems like all signs point to undue influence. What did the court ultimately decide?
The trial court sided with the church. They said, yep, this POD is invalid because it was a result of undue influence. The caregiver was ordered to give the money back to Mrs. Lamp's estate, as stated in her original will. Wow, that's a big win for the church. But more importantly, it feels like it honors Mrs. Lamp's true intentions, which is what everyone would want, right?
Absolutely. And it set a pretty important precedent for challenging PODs in Florida, even though the state's banking laws don't specifically call out undue influence in their rules.
Wait, really? If the law doesn't directly address undue influence when it comes to PODs, how did the court justify their decision?
That's where it gets interesting. The court pointed to Florida's strong public policy against abusing fiduciary or confidential relationships. Basically, they argued that even though PODs aren't explicitly mentioned in the banking statutes, they basically function as will substitutes.
Oh, I see.
So they should be subject to the same scrutiny and challenges as regular wills, including those based on undue influence.
So the court basically filled in the gaps, using broader legal principles to protect vulnerable individuals. Pretty clever.
It was a smart move, for sure. They cited several legal precedents confirming that even transfers made during someone's lifetime, like these POD designations, can be challenged based on undue influence.
This isn't just a Florida thing, then. This case is a wake-up call for anyone using PODs, showing they might not be as ironclad as people think.
Exactly. This case really highlights how important it is to have clear estate planning documents, but also to make sure your wishes are well documented to prevent any confusion or, well, manipulation. It's about protecting yourself and your legacy.
This whole thing has definitely piqued my curiosity about the nitty-gritty of PODs. Is there anything else from the court's decision we should point out to our listeners?
Yeah, there's a really insightful quote from the court's decision that I think is worth sharing. They said, and I quote, "A POD designation or Totten Trust, like a transfer on death provision, is a will substitute that doesn't transfer ownership of funds until the account holder kicks the bucket."
That's a pretty key takeaway. Yeah. It means these designations, even though they seem simple, carry the same weight and legal consequences as a traditional will.
Precisely. They should be approached with the same level of care and thoughtfulness.
Okay, so let's zoom out a bit. For our listener who might not be in Florida or even thinking about PODs right now, What's the bigger message here? What's the takeaway that everyone can relate to?
Well, even if you're not in the Sunshine State, the principles of undue influence, they're universal. It's a good reminder to be cautious, especially if you or someone you know is in a situation where there's a potential power imbalance. That could be with caregivers, financial advisors, even family members.
It's like you said, it's about protecting yourself and your legacy. This case really highlights that legal documents and financial decisions are often intertwined with complex human relationships, and we need to be aware of the potential for exploitation.
Couldn't have said it better myself. This case is a cautionary tale, urging everyone to take steps to protect themselves and their loved ones from undue influence.
All right, I think we've covered a lot of ground here unpacking this Florida case. It's definitely given us a lot to think about when it comes to PODs and undue influence. But before we move on, I have one more burning question.
So let's shoot.
What specific things did the court look at when they were deciding whether undue influence actually happened in this case?
That's a great question. Understanding those factors can really help us see how these cases are analyzed. The court focused on a few key things. First, they checked if there was a confidential relationship between the people involved, like the caregiver-patient relationship we saw here.
So the closer the relationship, the more scrutiny it gets. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. What else did they consider?
They also wanted to know if the beneficiary actively pushed for the designation, like did they manipulate the situation to benefit themselves? Or take steps to ensure they became the beneficiary.
So it's not just about being named a beneficiary. It's about how you got there. Did your actions contribute to you ending up in that position?
Exactly. And of course, they looked at the mental capacity of the account holder when the designation was made. Were they of sound mind, able to make decisions freely, and understand what those decisions meant?
That's crucial. We need to make sure people aren't being taken advantage of when they're vulnerable. Was there anything else they considered?
They also looked into the circumstances surrounding the designation, things like the timing. How close was it to the account holder's declining health and their death? Basically, did this happen when the person was especially vulnerable due to health issues?
So a sudden change in beneficiaries right before someone dies would raise serious red flags.
You bet. It's all about looking at the big picture and figuring out if there are any signs of coercion or manipulation.
Wow, it's way more complicated than you'd think. Sounds like proving undue influence is no easy task.
You're right. It requires careful examination of the evidence and a deep understanding of the legal principles at play.
This case is definitely proof of the complexities of estate planning and why getting legal advice is so important when you're navigating these sensitive matters.
I couldn't agree more. It's always better to be safe than sorry, especially when it comes to something as important as your legacy.
Well, this has been a really eye-opening look into a super important topic. But before we wrap up, I have another question for you.
I'm all ears. What's on your mind?
The court in this case told the caregiver to return the money to the estate. But what if she had already spent it all? What happens then?
That's a great question, and it takes us into some pretty murky legal waters. The court's order is clear, but enforcing it can be tricky if the money's gone.
So it's not as easy as just writing a check.
Not always. It might involve tracking down where the money went, potentially taking legal action against anyone who received the money knowing it was obtained through undue influence.
Whoa, so it could turn into a whole other legal mess. What if the caregiver just straight up refuses to do what the court says? What happens then?
That's where contempt of court comes in. The court has the power to impose penalties, you know, like fines or even jail time if someone doesn't follow their orders.
So there are some serious repercussions for ignoring a court order, even if it's about money.
Absolutely. The legal system has ways to enforce its judgments, even if it takes a little extra effort.
This is all really fascinating, but I feel like we're just scratching the surface. There's so much more to explore when it comes to estate planning, undue influence, and all the legal intricacies involved.
Yeah, you're right. We could talk about this for hours. But I think this deep dive has at least given our listener a better understanding of the key concepts and potential problems.
Totally. It's a good reminder that talking to a lawyer is always a smart move when you're dealing with this kind of stuff.
100%. It's always better to be safe than sorry, especially when it comes to something as important as your legacy.
This case is definitely a cautionary tale. It highlights how important it is to have clear documentation, know your rights, and protect yourself from potential exploitation. But with that in mind, I think it's time for us to switch gears a bit and look at some strategies for preventing undue influence.
I like it. Let's empower our listener to take charge of their estate planning.
Sounds good. We'll be right back after a short break to dive into some practical tips and strategies. Welcome back. We've been talking about some pretty intense stuff, you know, undue influence, legal battles, all that. Now, I'm kind of curious, what if the person who's supposed to return the money, what if they already spent it? Can you actually get that money back?
That's when things get really tricky. It often becomes a sort of financial investigation, tracing the money like a trail of breadcrumbs. The court might have to issue subpoenas, dig into bank records, even interview people who got some of the money.
So it's like a financial forensics team. Sounds intense.
It can be. And if the money was used to buy something like property or a car, the court could put a lien on those assets to try to recover the value.
Makes sense. But what if the person who got the money says they had no idea it was obtained through undue influence? Are they off the hook?
Well, that depends on the idea of good faith. If someone received the money without knowing anything was wrong, they might have a good defense. But if there's evidence that they knew or should have known about the undue influence, they could still be required to return the funds.
So in this case, ignorance isn't bliss, especially when a court order is involved. Now, this Florida case focused on a caregiver, but are there other situations where undue influence might happen with PODs?
Absolutely. Undue influence can happen anytime there's an imbalance of power or relationship where trust is a big factor. We often see it with older folks, people who have some diminished mental capacity, or those who rely heavily on others for care or help with their finances.
So it's not just about caregivers. Can you give us some examples of other situations where this might happen?
Sure. Imagine an elderly person who's isolated and depends on a family member for everything, like rides to the doctor or managing their bank accounts. That family member might use their influence to get themselves named as the beneficiary on a POD account, even if it goes against the person's true wishes.
That's a scary thought. So besides the red flags we already talked about, what are some other warning signs people should look out for?
One big red flag is a sudden, unexplained change in beneficiaries, especially if it happens when the account holder's health is declining or their mental state is changing. Another is if the beneficiary tries to isolate the account holder from family and friends, maybe limiting their access to information or support.
So isolation becomes a tool for manipulation, basically.
Mm-hmm.
It keeps other people out of the loop and makes it harder for anyone to step in.
Exactly. It's like they're trying to control the narrative. Another thing to watch out for is if the potential influencer is way too involved in the account holder's financial stuff, like always going with them to the bank or pushing them to change their accounts.
So it seems like it's all about recognizing those patterns of behavior that suggest someone might be using their position to take advantage of someone.
You got it. And remember, undue influence isn't always about outright threats or using force. It can be subtle, manipulative, even disguised as care and concern. That makes it even harder to spot.
So what should people do if they think undue influence is happening? It seems like a tough situation to deal with.
The most important thing is to document everything. Keep a journal, save emails or text messages, and if it's legal where you are, maybe even record conversations. Any evidence of concerning behavior or pressure tactics is really valuable.
So gathering evidence is key. What else can people do? Who can they turn to for help?
Reach out for support. Talk to family members, friends you trust, or professionals like lawyers, financial advisors, or social workers. They can offer guidance and help you see the situation more clearly.
It's good to remember that you don't have to go through this alone. There are resources out there to protect vulnerable individuals.
Exactly. And if the situation is serious, you can contact Adult Protective Services or the police. They have the power to investigate allegations of elder abuse, including financial exploitation.
This is some heavy stuff. Undue influence is clearly a big deal with serious consequences.
It really is. And as we've seen in this deep dive, it can even impact things like PODs, which seem pretty straightforward at first glance.
This episode has definitely given us a crash course in the darker side of estate planning. But I'm wondering, are there any positive takeaways we can offer our listeners?
For sure. This case shows how crucial it is to have open communication and to plan ahead. Talking honestly with your loved ones about your wishes, creating clear and legally sound estate planning documents, and getting professional advice can really help prevent undue influence and make sure your assets are protected.
Those are great tips. It's all about being informed, feeling empowered, and taking charge.
You nailed it. And even if you're not dealing with estate planning right now, understanding these ideas can help you recognize and address potential undue influence in your own relationships, whether it's with family, friends, or even coworkers.
This conversation has definitely given me a much better understanding of undue influence. It's a reminder that we need to be watchful and look out for people who might be vulnerable to this type of exploitation.
Couldn't agree more. And I hope this deep dive has given our listeners the knowledge and tools to do just that.
I'm definitely feeling more informed. I have to admit, this is a pretty heavy topic. Maybe we can switch gears a bit and talk about some practical ways to prevent undue influence from happening in the first place.
That's a fantastic idea. Let's focus on those proactive steps and give our listeners the power to take control of their own estate planning journey. What can people do today to make sure their wishes are respected and their loved ones are protected?
Okay, so let's say you're listening to this and thinking, I want to make sure my wishes are followed and no one can pull a fast one on me or my family. What are some practical things you can do?
Well, the foundation is a solid estate plan. And I'm not just talking about a will. It's about having a comprehensive strategy, a durable power of attorney, a healthcare surrogate designation, and a living will if you want one.
For those of us who aren't lawyers, can you break those terms down and explain why they're so important when it comes to preventing undue influence?
Think of them as safety nets. A durable power of attorney lets you choose someone you trust to handle your finances if you can't do it yourself. A healthcare surrogate does the same thing for medical decisions. And a living will spells out what you want to happen with your end-of-life care.
So having these documents in place basically stop someone else from making choices for you that might not be what you want.
Exactly. It's about keeping control and making sure your voice is heard, even if you're not able to speak up for yourself.
That makes a lot of sense.
Uh-huh.
You also mentioned a living trust. Can you tell us a little more about that?
Sure. Living trusts can be really useful, especially if you have a lot of assets or want to avoid going through probate court, which can be a long and public process. Basically, you put ownership of your stuff into the trust while you're still alive. And then it's distributed according to your instructions after you pass away.
So it's like a shortcut for your assets, avoiding all the legal hoops and delays of probate court.
Exactly. And it can give you more privacy and control compared to a traditional will.
So we've got the legal documents covered. But what about the human side of things? How do we create open communication and safeguards in our relationships to minimize the risk of undue influence happening?
That's where things get a little more complex. Regularly reviewing your estate plan with your loved ones is super important. Let them know who you've chosen as your power of attorney, healthcare surrogate, and beneficiaries. Transparency is key.
So no more hiding those documents in a secret place and never mentioning them?
Right. Open communication helps prevent misunderstandings and makes it less likely that someone will try to manipulate the situation.
It's about building trust and accountability within the family. Are there other things people can do to add an extra layer of security?
Absolutely. If you're worried about potential undue influence, don't be afraid to bring in a neutral third party, like a lawyer or a mediator. They can help facilitate conversations, make sure everyone's voice is heard, and even act as a witness to your wishes.
That's a really smart move. It adds an extra layer of protection and keeps things objective.
Exactly. Remember, prevention is the best medicine. Taking these proactive steps to address potential issues can save you and your loved ones a lot of heartache and legal battles down the road.
Welcome back to the show. We spent a good amount of time breaking down this Florida case and really digging into the darker side of estate planning, especially when it comes to that potential for undue influence.
Yeah, it's definitely been a journey through some complicated legal stuff.
For sure. But now let's shift gears a bit. Let's talk about how to protect ourselves and the people we care about.
That's good.
We've talked about the risks. Now I want to know, what can we actually do to minimize those risks? How can we make sure our wishes are actually carried out? What are some practical steps our listeners can take?
Well, one important thing is to be really careful about who we give access and authority to. Remember those roles we talked about earlier, like power of attorney and healthcare surrogate? We need to choose those people wisely.
Right. So if someone's named as your power of attorney, they basically have the legal power to make financial decisions for you if you can't do it yourself.
Exactly. That's why it's so important to pick someone you really trust, someone who gets your values and would always act in your best interest.
And the healthcare surrogate, what kind of decisions would they be making?
The healthcare surrogate steps in when you're not able to make medical decisions for yourself. So they'd have to consider your wishes, like what you've said in your living will or in conversations you've had, and advocate for you in healthcare settings.
So yeah, these are big roles, especially if you're ever in a situation where you're incapacitated or dealing with serious health issues. It's about having someone you trust to speak for you when you can't speak for yourself.
Exactly. And having those documents in place, making it clear what you want and naming people you trust, those are big deterrents for anyone thinking about undue influence.
That makes sense. But I'm also wondering, what if someone thinks they are being pressured, you know, manipulated into making financial or legal decisions? What should they do?
First of all, trust your gut. If something feels wrong or off, it probably is. Don't hesitate to get advice from someone outside of the situation.
So who should they talk to? Who can give them an unbiased perspective?
A good friend, a family member you trust, or a professional, someone like an attorney, a financial advisor, or a counselor. They can be so helpful in these situations. They can offer support, help you figure out what's going on, and explore your options.
Right. It's important to remember, you're not alone in this. There are people who can help you through it. But what if, even with all the precautions, a dispute still comes up? What happens then?
You're right. Disputes can happen even when we try our best to avoid them. And that's when it's super important to know your legal rights and get professional legal help. Going to court can be expensive and emotionally draining, so it's often best to try other ways to resolve the dispute first.
Like mediation.
Exactly. Mediation can be really effective. You have a neutral third party come in, and they help everyone communicate and work towards an agreement that everyone can live with.
So it's a way to possibly avoid a long court battle and find a solution that works for everyone involved.
Exactly. And often, mediation is much faster and less expensive than going to court.
Wow, this has been such an eye-opening conversation. We've covered a lot of ground, from that specific Florida case to bigger strategies for preventing and addressing undue influence.
Yeah, it's a topic people often avoid talking about, but bringing it out in the open gives people the power to protect themselves and their loved ones.
So true. And a big thank you to our expert for sharing your knowledge and insights with us today.
Happy to do it. It's always great to talk about these important issues.
To our listeners, we encourage you to keep learning, stay alert, and remember that knowledge is power. The more we understand about undue influence and take steps to protect ourselves and the people we care about, the safer and more empowered we'll all be.
That's right. Stay informed, stay empowered, and we'll catch you next time.